Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Proverbs. We're all the way up to Proverbs chapter 25, verse 4, where Solomon writes, "Take away the dross from silver, and there comes out a vessel for the smith. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness." What Solomon is saying is this, in other words, to change the metaphor to a more familiar but less elegant adage, a few bad apples will corrupt the whole. No matter how much integrity resides in the man at the top of the food chain, so to speak, if some of the people around him, whether they be other pastors or elders, are rascals, the health and stability of the whole organization is at risk. A few bad fruit can and will over time infect the other fruit, and generally rot will set in, even if the barrel happens to be a good barrel. Verses 6 and 7. Solomon says, "Do not claim honor in the presence of the king, or those of great influence or power, and do not stand in the place of great men. For it is better that it be said to you, 'Come up here,' than that you should be put lower in the presence of a prince whom your eyes have seen." This very proverb the Lord Jesus drew upon when he taught those scrambling for seats at the head of the banquet table to go instead for the cheap seats, lest they should get embarrassed by being asked to vacate their higher places and get consigned to general admission, so to speak. Better to be asked, Solomon says, to come up higher than be asked to go down lower. In other words, this is a pride-humility proverb. If in pride one of us tries to exalt himself in the presence of a king or the presence of some important person, to grab a seat near a person of power and influence, an authority figure, such prideful presumption is begging to be noticed and taken down and humiliated. This is the way God works. And frankly, that is the way human power often works. Those who are able to do so almost by instinct want to knock social climbers and political wannabes off their little pedestals. It's just a game people play. So here's a little reality therapy for any who happen to take on the persona of climbers. 25:8 says, "Do not go out hastily to argue your case. Otherwise, what will you do in the end when your neighbor puts you to shame?" The exact intent of this proverb is not easy to decipher, for it is a bit nebulous. I think this is another warning about rashness in jumping to conclusions. In this particular case, the kind of rashness that, for example, would run into court and make a hasty accusation about something we have seen. The point is that the things we see may not always add up to what we thought we saw. We can just go rushing to judgment and prematurely make serious accusations against people. And if we're foolish enough to do that, there's a great risk that when all the facts are on the table, we will look ridiculous, if not malicious, and our judgment, if not our reputation, will suffer serious damage. You remember, Eli, the high priest, misjudged Hannah, accusing her of being a sot when he saw her in the tabernacle area in distress, and Hannah was moving her lips without speaking audibly. In fact, she was in anguished prayer. Eli's eyes saw what they saw, but they seriously misinterpreted what they saw. Had he not said something to Hannah, he would have gone on, at least in his mind, of accusing her of being dissolute. So do not go out hastily to argue your case, that is, to contend. Otherwise, what will you do in the end when your neighbor comes along with facts that you had not heard and you had not taken into account, you had not investigated, and puts you to shame and makes you look silly? Verse 9, argue your case with your neighbor and do not reveal the secret of another, lest when he who hears it reproach you and the evil report about you not pass away. Information given in confidence is a sacred trust. That trust should not be violated for the sake of winning an argument or extricating oneself from a jam. Somebody has told us something, given us information, we're in possession of it, but it is confidential information. Suddenly we find ourselves in some kind of jam or we're in contention with somebody and we have to prove ourselves right. And we arrogate at that point the right to ourselves, a right that we don't have, to divulge confidence that we have not been authorized to divulge. Jesus said, what good is it to gain the whole world and lose your own soul? Well, in a similar vein, what good is it to win a battle in that way that I described and lose a war, namely your reputation, because you sell out another's confidence to save your case? One time, as I've mentioned, I taught in a Bible college for 10 years. The president was terribly insecure, and he horribly politicized the atmosphere. I tried every way in the world to work with him, but his political insecurity in his post made him kind of like a rubber band that always went back into place the minute you let go and thought it was all worked out. It was really a Saul David kind of scenario. He confessed his fear that I would somehow manage to become president of the college instead of him, though I had no such ambition in my mind. He just felt guilty because he knew in his heart that he should not be the head of the school. He knew that he had gained it by really political means rather than on the basis of merit. In a moment of weakness one time when we were trying to work things out, and he and I were having a candid talk in a local restaurant, he broke down and he tearfully told me some rather intimate matters related to his wife. She did go off the deep end, and later they were divorced. I'm quite sure he regretted sharing those things with me, for I know that he must always have feared that I would use them against him. That information could have hurt him. But as many things as he did to me, I considered the confidence sacred, and I would not have betrayed it for anything, even though he acted like an enemy much of the time. Now, folks, life is very complicated at times, and I have seen occasions where too much was at stake. Let's say for the safety of the state, or for the safety of a school, or the health of a church. To respect a confidence in those situations when one knows the well-being of innocent people is considered. For example, if someone told you in confidence that they were considering doing violence to themselves or others, and described to you the evils that they had done, and there were people out there still hanging because of what they had done, at that point, one has to consider one's social responsibility to others superior to that kind of person's need to keep a confidence, at least in my opinion. That's what I meant when I said life is very complicated at times, and sometimes this cannot be an absolute. But what this proverb is talking about is violating a confidence out of selfish interest, not out of public interest, not out of broad social responsibility. I mean, if somebody came up and said, I want to tell you something, but it's just between you and me. Tonight, I'm planning to go kill so-and-so. Well, at that point, you can't keep that confidential. You can't come back later and say, well, they told me in confidence, I'm just so sorry that that happened, but, you know, it was my sacred bond. Well, not in a case like that. There is a hierarchy of responsibility, and in that case, you have to say, I'm sorry, but that is a promise that cannot be kept. And you may not be able to reveal it at that time, because then they may rub you out and you would not even be able to intervene. That's an extreme situation, but you see what I mean. Now, verse 11. Like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Fine words are more powerful weapons than physical arms. And words that are timely, resonating, and memorably crafted suit the mind as precious accessories adorn the body. You remember President Franklin Roosevelt said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Well, those words inspired a nation on the eve of the war with Japan. Abraham Lincoln's immortal Gettysburg Address was another. Winston Churchill's saying, speaking for the exhausted but victorious Royal Air Force, never have so many owed so much to so few. Or Ronald Reagan's, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Or the American Declaration of Independence. All illustrations of timely words, memorably crafted and resonating with the spirit of a people, have always moved men and nations. Never underestimate the power of words for good or for evil. Learn words would be my advice. Learn how to use them. Ponder how to have something to say rather than just have to say something. I am not certain that people with the strongest verbal skills are smarter, but I do know that those who can speak and write well are more influential. It is a good skill to cultivate in the service of Christ. Why? Well, if we have much to say, why not learn to say it well? Verse 12, chapter 25, like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. When a wise man's rebuke meets a truly listening ear, the recipient is blessed. The best thing is to be correct, but the next best thing is to enjoy the advantage of a wise mentor who will correct us. That advantage is all for naught, however, unless we who need correction have an ear to hear correction. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. 25:13. Now first, I must explain the figure here because it has been problematic for interpreters. When it snows, the accompanying air is naturally cool. We all know that. The work of harvest time would be uncomfortably warm to hot. An unexpected blast of cool air in harvest time would be welcome relief to the harvesters, just as walking into an air-conditioned space is refreshing to those who've been working hard under the hot sun. Well, in the same way, the cool air refreshes a hot, sweaty man in the fields, so a reliable messenger is refreshing to whoever sends him. You see, some business, for example, like negotiations, can be very delicate, not to mention quite consequential to businesses, to nations, and so forth. Matters wrongly represented by an emissary can upset the apple cart and much be lost. So, it is a great relief to those in authority to have competent and faithful emissaries speak for them, and have the confidence that those personal representatives will faithfully represent the spirit and the content of one's communication, so that the response from the other party or parties is the result of understanding and not misunderstanding. This proverb is a word to the wise about being dependable when entrusted with the interest of others, and not having an agenda of our own in such matters that may sink the deal or obstruct the desired result. Now, if this is true of human servants representing human authorities, think how much more important it is for servants of God, entrusted with speaking for Him, to faithfully discharge our office without confusing matters or compromising the mission by perverting or mellowing the message God entrusted us with. It rejoices not only the heart of man in such situations, but it rejoices the heart of God when His servants faithfully and selflessly communicate the whole counsel of the Lord without timidity or sycophancy. Verse 14, like clouds and wind without rain is the man who boasts of his gifts falsely. Most of us adults, I imagine, have lived somewhere when drought was a problem. The grass was scorched, the crops were languishing, creeks and springs were drying up, the ground was powdery and the air filled with dust particles, and everybody wishing and praying for just a good hard rain. Every once in a while it would cloud up a bit and all signs were pointing to relief, only for the clouds and the wind finally to pass without yielding any precipitation. Great alleviation gets cruelly dashed on the rocks of failed expectations. So it is a cruel thing for someone to promise assistance to those in need and fail to deliver. We've all seen it. It's better to have never spoken a promise, a pledge, than leaving people holding the bag expecting its fulfillment. An empty bag is easier to deal with than an empty promise. It just makes matters worse. Some people are empty boasters. They seek attention by presenting themselves as saviors. Then when somebody is not looking, they ride off into the sunset without delivering. As Kidner aptly points out, false teaching is like that. Pastors who crave a following will sometimes lead people on with false spiritual expectations that in the end, when they fail to materialize, just embitter and disillusion people who bought into those expectations, and at the end of the day, they are almost intractable cynics. Such disappointing shepherds will give account for that. For example, they promise miracles of healing that don't happen. They assure financial recovery for sacrificial giving to their ministry. They promise quickie microwave solutions to personal problems. I will show you 7 ways which if you will do, you will never blah, 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 blah. They promise all kinds of things to people if only they will believe God for them. I'm telling you, if you trust God for this, it will happen. But it so happens it's not God's will for those things to happen. They set people up for spiritual falls by boasting great things that their boast does not and cannot deliver. If you come to such and such a church, you will see God doing all these great things that these other bum churches cannot deliver. Not likely. It is a scandal, and they will give account for that. Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of his gifts falsely. Verse 15, by forbearance a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks a bone. Here again, a ruler can stand for any eminency or person of authority or power. Such persons are typically sophisticated, though not always, and one does not typically break down their resistance to actions or ideas through temper tantrums, threats, insults, harangues, or bombastic preachiness. You'll get just the opposite. What is most effective in making one's case with people of power and influence is calm, imperturbable cool, and gentlemanly responses. If any breakthrough can be made, and oftentimes it can't, but if any breakthrough can be made, this is the demeanor that will more likely accomplish it. Folks, what works for rulers, in fact, works for most people. Though it is more important to understand in the case of people of power, because so many important outcomes hang on their decisions or influence. So we should study this proverb, meditate on it. We should be prudent in the way we approach people to make our case. A good example was the appearance of now Chief Justice John Roberts at his confirmation hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee, half of whom were poised to be hostile, and they were lying in the weeds like coiled snakes to sink their fangs into him at the first sign that they had drawn blood. I remember that he was patient with powerful people. He was patient with some powerful people who absolutely did not deserve a grain of it. But in the end, he won recommendation for confirmation from more members of the committee than expected. Kidner says the point is that so unassuming a weapon may win surprising victory. Here's it. Cool wins more times than hot, by far. Great wisdom. Verse 16. Have you found honey? Eat only what you need, lest you have it in excess and vomit it up. Now here is a lesson again about moderation in all things. Excess in an otherwise good thing is counterproductive. Folks, we have to know when to stop. We have to know when to stop eating. We have to know when to stop working. We have to know when to stop talking, when to stop sleeping, when to stop exercising, when to stop pondering and start doing, when to stop doing and start thinking, when to stop visiting, when to stop helping, when to stop giving. In the Old Testament, in times of Joshua, the Lord told him, stop praying and get up and do what I've told you to do. All those are good things, but taken to extremes, they can hurt rather than help. That's what we learn here in verse 16. Have you found honey? That's a good thing. That's a helpful thing, healthful thing. Eat only what you need, lest you have an excess of it and vomit it. We need balance in our lives, and we should seek it. It is not good to get our buttons stuck in one mode. Eventually, it'll probably burn us out and will make us look a little fanatical. Verse 17. Let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. Now here's wise counsel about wearing out our welcome. Look, people need their space, even our family, our best friends. You know the saying, good fences make good neighbors. Well, the same thing goes for good doors. Doors are meant to keep people out as well as keep them in. So visit your friends, visit your family long enough to be a blessing and receive a blessing. But leave before you become a burden. Most of us have company, and when we do, we are delighted to see them come, and when they leave, no matter how wonderful a time we've enjoyed together, it's usually a little relief to see them go, not because there's anything wrong with them, but we all just need our space and return to our habits and routine. That is, I repeat, no reflection on them or us, but just a good indication of human nature. That is harder when one has guests, even good friends. So don't overdo it. You found honey in a friendship. Eat just enough. Too much of it, and you will, so to speak, vomit. A lot of social wisdom right there. Well, dear friends, thank you for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.